Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where each time we risk our eyesight by squinting at the tiny figures on picture postcards, deciphering the spidery writing on the backs as we attempt to understand the memories, meanings, and stories of picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson. Today I'm delighted to say my guests are writer Victoria Richards and historian Catherine Ferry. Catherine and Victoria, hello and welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, Victoria Richards is, like so many of us these days, a hyphenate. She's a journalist, a writer, and a poet. She has in the past worked for BBC News, The Times, The Independent, has appeared on Newsnight, BBC World, and ITV News. She regularly writes for Independent Voices and HuffPost UK. She's currently working on, when she gets out of this room, a novel, a short story collection, flash fiction, books for children, and she's just had a book of poetry published, Primus 4. And she has time for all this because some years ago she gave up shopping.
and wrote about it.
All the free time has given her a chance to continue her literary career. Another thing that Victoria did, she co-founded The Second Source, a group of female journalists tackling sexual harassment in the media. So Victoria comes to us with an E11 East London postmark.
That's right, yep. Born and bred. My family are all, we're all born within the sound of Bow Bells. I feel a bit of an imposter, really, because I'm on the outskirts of it now, but very close to the beautiful Bluebell Woods of Wanstead Park,
which
get lots of visitors every spring when they come out. So
I wonder if there were postcards of Wanstead Park in the golden age. I'm sure there were.
Yeah, there would have been. And it's just so beautiful. I mean, it's kind of over now. It's sort of a brief 2-week period and then they all wither and die. But you've got to make the most of it while they're there.
Yes, the poetry, the passing of time.
Mm.
And do you still send postcards?
I have to admit that I don't very often, but I was quite surprised that I still receive them,
it seems.
Yes, I have my most recent postcard that I received, which was sent actually just about a month ago from my dad when we were at Kew Gardens together on the same day. And he sneak off,
exactly.
And wrote a postcard, and it's a wooden postcard featuring a penguin, and he sent it to my children who were also at Kew Gardens. So it's all a bit meta, but
very nice.
Sweet, I think.
So this is you can hear it here.
Yes.
Tom in the sound booth is panicking. So that's a wooden... I mean, wooden postcards are quite a new thing, I think, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and they're printed on Forestry Service Commission sort of agreed wood.
Oh, so they haven't destroyed a forest for it.
No, I think it's good. It's from the Wooden Postcard Company. It's very nice. I mean, something you could probably use as a weapon if you know, it's got sharp edges.
Leather postcards came in about 100 years ago, but...
Wow.
And then there was all kinds of problems about how much you charged for them. I wondered, was that a normal postage on that one?
Yeah, look, first class stamp.
And he got away with it.
I know.
Very good, very good. Oh, I'm glad to see that arrive. It would make a very pleasing sound on the doormat, no doubt.
Yes, it would. A good clunk.
Well, Catherine Ferry is probably Britain's most dedicated fan of the seaside. To be honest, I'm a little disappointed that she hasn't come into the studio riding a donkey and clutching a stick of rock, but it wouldn't have surprised me if she had. She fell in love with beach huts in 1998, has written two books about them. She's even judged beach hut competitions on several occasions. Her writing research has taken her from beach huts to bungalows to butlins and, in fact, the whole of the British seaside holiday in all its gaudy detail and colour. Mm. And, Catherine, what postmark do you find stamped on you?
I'm going to have to say the postmark of Great Yarmouth because it's my favourite seaside resort.
So that's not somewhere you were born? Or?
It's not, but I was born in the in East Anglia.
Okay.
And I feel very drawn to that area. And I went to university there as well. So I kind of, that's kind of where I feel my kind of my heart is,
it's
I suppose.
Seeped under your skin.
It has, yeah. And Great Yarmouth is just a beautiful seafront and it's got wonderful old Edwardian and Victorian buildings. And yeah, I just sort of get a lift every time I go there. I would like to live there and make it a permanent postmark, but you know, that will come.
And as a fish, an aficionado of the seaside resort, does Great Yarmouth, is that the kind of the ultimate, the, or the most typical, or the most atmospheric?
It's just, it's something about the seafront there because a lot of the old buildings survive. So it's got a winter garden, which is Victorian, and it's an iron and glass one, and it was taken to pieces. It started life in Torquay. And
good Lord.
Yeah, they built it in the wrong place, so nobody used it. They took it to pieces, put it on a barge, and sent it round the coast to Great Yarmouth, and apparently no glass was broken in the process.
Wow.
And that kind of story,
like moving
I just
the Crystal
love that.
Palace, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only other example, I think.
Wow.
And there's a...
And I found it stressful putting up my greenhouse.
So. Yeah, I can imagine there were some high stress levels at the
wow.
time. Wow. Yeah.
And but Great Yarmouth never really had the ambition of a Blackpool, is that right?
Oh, I think it did for a while. And it was really, really popular. And if you talk to anyone from Blackpool, they'll say Blackpool is obviously the best. But, you know, I think the two are pretty well matched in their surviving architectural history. And I'm a bit of a sucker for that.
Very good. Now, when did you last send a postcard?
I sent a postcard from Scarborough, appropriately enough. When I went there in the Easter holidays, I sent it to my parents.
Very good.
I probably would have sent more in previous years, but now it's just my parents that get them, and they have a little notice board where they pin up all their postcards. I try and sort of pick a nice, arty, interesting-looking one, but I have noticed that all the postcards on that board are now only from me. So,
and all seaside resorts, presumably?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you find yourself doing the classic, you know, the first lines about the weather?
Yeah, always, yeah.
I think that's obligatory,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Well, before we discover the cards that Catherine and Victoria have brought along, I'll give you a quick card of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on the Twitter, on at past postcard. An old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So to somewhat with in honour of your expertise, Catherine, the first one is a rather glamorous card.
That's
actually, from,
great.
I never know how to say that. It's Teignmouth.
I think it's Teignmouth.
Teignmouth. There you go. And so you can see, it's a sort of blonde bombshell, really. Mm. A woman very, very happy about holding a beach ball. Unusual card, actually. I've only ever seen this particular example of it. It's a bit glamorous for an English seaside resort,
yep.
I think. And the message that I selected from the back... by the way, 1964, this one, July. And the message was... Have flayed the skin of my gammy leg. Very painful.
That doesn't really sort of match the photo on the front, does
it? I think she's smiling through the pain.
Yeah, maybe she is. I mean...
Well, that didn't take long, so I'll do another quick one. This is a place that I know you know, Catherine. So, Wells Next to the Sea.
Beautiful.
Extraordinary colour. And that might have been after some kind of nuclear explosion. But the card is coffee-stained. It's a sunset. And this is a little bit later. This is 1972. The old pink 2.5-piece stamp. And it was sent to Cambridge. And the message... I suppose it's an example of the two sides of life, really. We have all caught the sun. Also a sickness germ. So... one thing you might wish for and another,
not so
another
much.
Less desirable.
If you don't have norovirus on your holiday, then have you really been on holiday?
Precisely, precisely. And in fact, sickness is a big part of... Isn't that right? You stop work, you relax.
Exactly, your immune system.
It catches up with you. We've all had holidays like that. Well, just to let you know at home, images of all the cards we discussed today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can investigate for yourself and see that we're not making it up. Now, Catherine and Victoria, you've been kind enough to come up the stairs to the studio with some postcards of your own. Victoria, let's start with you. The first card you brought you haven't actually brought.
No.
It's a card that you wanted to bring.
I was just thinking about that when you said that.
We're not
going
to lie to the listener here.
On the blog.
So tell me about this card.
I have to fess up about fact that it's not physically with us, but it's one of those frustrating things where I remember the last place that it was before I moved it to a safer place.
We've all been there.
We always do that, and you remember the place before. So the postcard that I don't have with me today is normal postcard sort of size, except that it is shaped like a matzo bread.
Okay.
Yes.
What shape is that then?
It's like a giant cracker, really. I suppose. Sort of beveled edges.
Is it not properly square then?
What's this? Normal postcards are sort of a rectangle, isn't it? It is square. It's a square matzo shaped postcard.
Very good.
And it would be stamped with a Jerusalem postmark from 2001. And the card that I really wish I was clutching right now, I remember, and it's very special and very poignant to me for many reasons, but it came from a childhood best friend of mine. And it was her first trip to Israel. And it really marked the start of a dramatic change for the rest of her life. Really, she was raised as a secular Jew,
right?
Didn't really practice, didn't go to synagogue. Her parents weren't very observant, and then she went to Israel in between sort of the gap years between our university academic terms, and really fell in love with the place and found her place in the world.
Wow!
And it really, you know, it basically inspired her religious journey. She's now very Orthodox. Her husband is a rabbi.
She's in Israel, is she?
No, they've moved back now, actually, and they run a synagogue together. They've got four children.
Right.
And I believe I'm her only Gentile friend.
Okay.
And it's just really interesting to me to remember this postcard in particular, because it was so... it was obviously so inspirational for her. I've just...
So do we catch this moment of her excitement and her transformation?
Exactly. Wow. And it's really on the cusp of it. And it's, you know, to dramatically alter the sort of path of someone's life and to have sort of physical evidence of that first moment.
So you've got a transcript of this?
Yeah, because, I mean, I've always found it fascinating. And, you know, when I've taken to writing fiction, I've written a lot of kind of, I guess, vignettes or slices of life relating to this moment, just because it's always been so interesting and important to me. And I just wanted to pick out a couple of lines from this postcard. And it began with shalom, a good greeting. And then she writes, it's such a magical, beautiful place. I feel like I've been blessed. When I decided to come out here, I was so scared, but it's one of the best things I've ever done. And then she details some of the things she did. For example, kayaking down the Jordan River, driving through the Judea Desert, floating in the Dead Sea, quad biking.
So good tourist things.
Yeah, great
on the spiritual journey.
Exactly. Shopping in Tel Aviv. And then it gets a bit deeper. She says, we've had some really deep, special moments here. We went to the Wailing Wall on Tish B'Av, which forgive my pronunciation there. I hope that's correct. The saddest day in history for Jews, where you fast to commemorate the destruction of the first and second temples in Jerusalem. It was such a humbling experience. And then here's the killer moment that really has made me stop and think all these years. I can tell that life is going to be so different after this.
Wow.
And I just think...
That's a privilege to have it on a postcard.
It's amazing, isn't it? And the fact that, you know, our lives have taken very different paths. We were best school friends, you know, in that sort of incomparable, inseparable teenage relationship way where... We described each other as soulmates. We spent all our sort of waking moments together. And it's been a long process. It's been about 15 years now where we've had to kind of struggle a little bit and talk our way through our very different lives. You know, I'm living a very secular life. I'm an atheist. She's very religious. You know, it's been very difficult. But we've come back together now and we have shared experiences again. We're both mothers. We have all of that history and nostalgia and the memories. And it's a really sort of beautiful and, I think, lifelong friendship that we have.
So how did you feel, Victoria, when you received this card? Can you remember?
I remember a little envy because she was away doing something completely different, you know, outside of our previous experiences, just a whole new life. And a bit sad, I think, sort of prematurely, that
at the fact that I could sense that our lives are going in different directions.
Just pulling away.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it's just kind of something that everyone has to go through with their, you know, teenage relationships, whether that's romantic relationships or familial or friendships.
It's but often, actually, also, I suppose, you know, friendships kind of change and evolve. Mm. It's rarely expressed, written down so clearly and defined like that. Normally people sort of drift in different directions in life.
Mm.
But you held on to the card.
Yes. Yes, I did hold on to the card. And it's interesting. It sort of feels sometimes like a moment of prescience. You know, why did I hold on to this card? Was it just because it's an unusual shape and because it's kind of a funny, you know, image or whatever? But given the sort of significance that it later proved to have, I'm so glad it did, and it's actually inspired so much of my fiction writing and poetry since, just because it's such a clear kind of, it's kind of a loss and a grief, and then a redemption and a redefining of those sort of boundaries of a relationship, I think.
And there's no reason why this serious stuff can't be put on a postcard.
Mm, I know. It's unusual, perhaps, but
thank God you haven't lost it.
Yes, let's not talk about that.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for sharing what she shared with you, with us and the listeners.
You're welcome.
Now, Catherine, I think you're breaking the rules. I think you've actually got two for the price of one here with your first cards. The first one, I think, is something that you inherited, is that right?
Yeah, so this one, I started collecting postcards probably as a teenager, but I didn't really have a purpose. I didn't have a kind of defined area of collection. I just liked the feel of them and the pictures. And I grew up in a little town in Devon, and there was a shop there, sort of gift shop there, and she had very nice postcards. I remember some they were artists drawn with animals on, and I used to go in her shop. And I think I must have told this lady that I collected postcards.
And I guess they're pocket money priced.
Absolutely, yes. So it's not a major investment, is it? It's an easy thing to collect when you're quite young, and you can have a lot of them without taking up too much space. So
yes, you have to explain that to my wife.
I know, exactly. Yes, I do have that issue with my husband. But this one, it wasn't sent to me. So it was sent to the owner of this shop. Because when she learnt that I collected postcards, she gave me her collection of postcards.
Ah.
And I don't think that she was a collector per se. I think she just couldn't throw them away.
Yes.
And she had a lot. And some of them I remember, you know, there were some from places like Tunisia. And I looked at these cards and just thought, oh, how amazing, these wonderful places. And I think it probably helped inspire a bit of wanderlust in me, actually. But some of them are just fairly ordinary. And they were sitting in my parents' loft until quite recently, this whole box of postcards, which I had alphabetized, which I'm slightly ashamed of. But
useful indexing skills for later.
I don't know how I indexed them, actually, because some of them were a bit random. But now I collect postcards with seaside themes, and I collect a subsection of my collection is John Hind postcards.
Ah, yes.
And John Hind was just a master of colour photography quite early on, and the postcards are always beautiful, and particularly the ones of Devon and Cornwall, where in the 1960s they were presenting a very kind of Mediterranean view of the West Country at the time when lots of people were going there in their cars, you know, the first time they could actually get there. So a lot of the ones I found, they refer to camping and caravanning because this was the cheap way of doing it. It's the time of sort of independence, and so funnily, some of these pictures from these postcards from that box in my parents' loft are now sort of relevant again.
And so the seeds of your interest were...
Yeah, they were there already.
It's funny how that happens, isn't
yeah,
it, actually?
Exactly.
I think sometimes you're lucky if you get to rediscover the interest
Absolutely.
You had early on.
Absolutely.
I don't think everyone gets to.
No, exactly, and I do feel very lucky. But I've alighted on this one because it's just got a funny message on the back. It's a John Hind postcard from Port Mellon near Mevagissey in Cornwall.
With a nice red... Is it a red jumper?
Absolutely.
The
guy in the foreground is wearing a red shirt with rolled-up sleeves,
very
looking good. Very cash. And the woman with him has a red cardigan draped over her arm, which may or may not have been provided by the photographer.
I think so.
Quite likely. But it's just a funny message. It was sent on the 19th of August 1985 to this lady who owned the shop. Edna, her name was. And it starts... Did you know I'd done a bunk? I mean, where are we going from there? Can't say I feel at ease being here on my own.
Ooh.
I know, exactly.
And this was just given to you. You'd think
it's in a minor
you might
collection.
Hold on to that.
I know, exactly.
Is that a bunk from school, from a relationship, from the country, from a prison? I mean, what could it be?
I want the most dramatic answer to be true.
All of those.
Absolutely.
All of the above.
But then, obviously, something's happened because she says, hope you've recovered from Saturday. We were worried about you.
Oh, and this is great.
Getting better.
When I knew this lady, she was, you know, getting on a little bit, being polite. So this is a sort of different
Edna.
Life. I know.
Edna's
exactly.
Got a pass.
What was she up to? We get to the weather, of course. It's dry and sunny, but quite blustery.
She's covering her tracks now.
Yes, exactly. Doing the important weather detail. This is where I was dragged up in one of the houses overlooking the bay. Tell Lynn and Felicity hello.
Very good. There's a lot to unpack there.
I know. I'm working on David to join me on Friday evening for the weekend. See you soon, Margaret.
The saucy devil.
There's
David.
An awful lot in there. And I wish, you know, I could go back and see this lady and say, what was this all about, you know? But it was just in among all these postcards. And I think as a child, I'm not sure I even read the backs of these, really, because that's not what it was about. It was about the nice pictures. But looking back on it, I just kind of think, oh, I wish I'd got to know this lady a bit more just from this postcard collection.
That tales of a life.
That picture, presumably, would about 15 to 20 years old when you got the card. In
85, yeah,
I mean,
could well be.
I thought that was late 60s.
It does look
image.
It. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's funny how the images on cards linger for years and years. I mean, you could go down now to Piccadilly Circus and buy cards, not sold as a retro item, but where the pictures are at least 20 years out of date.
Yeah.
I mean, is this a common theme from that time, do either of you know? You know, having the two people perfectly poised in the foreground with the red. What about
in
the colours?
Yeah, absolutely. They would, the photographers would wait for exactly the right sky, you know, even if it took a couple of days, and then they would take sort of pot plants with them as well. Hydrangeas were
props.
Very good. Yeah. A sort of nice pink flower was good in the foreground, and they would put them there. So absolutely, the red in that is the sort of pop of colour. It's really...
Who's that? Is it taken by John Hine?
No, it's I can never pronounce his name. Nagel?
Oh, yes.
What I love about these is that it does... give the attribution to the photographer as well.
It's saying
that
this is seriousness about it.
An artistry about it that is unusual. I don't think any of the other publishers did that, did they?
No, really. You barely get a proper publisher's credit sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think they owned it totally as well. There was no sense of, you've done the photograph now.
Yeah. I wonder what the print run would have been on these kind of things.
The exposure
that
these photographers would have got is probably more than... They are
known photographers now, the John Hine photographers. Now, we're sneaking in too, so we better move on to this second one.
Okay, so this second one is...
It's not done a bunk, this one.
No, and this one is from me. I mean, I was away from home, but I was legitimately away from home. In fact, with my school, on a school trip.
Ah, perfect time to send a postcard.
Exactly, and the postcard on the front shows Port Merion in North Wales... very nice village built there by Clough Williams Ellis. All kind of eclectic mix of architecture on the coast in Wales. A kind of idealised village, famous for The Prisoner.
Of course, yes.
But obviously I had no concept of that. It's a bit before my time. But I sent it to my grandparents and I said, I'm having a great time here at Butlins. So I had been on... something called Adventure Week that they used to run, and this was in 1988, I was 11. They used to do this, it was kind of to get, before the holidaymakers came in, they'd have these hundreds, possibly thousands of kids at Easter time.
Oh,
and it was
God.
Sort of training for the Redcoats and all the staff, kind of to get them.
And a cheap holiday for the kids,
cheap holiday for the kids, yeah. And so we went off on visits. But we also did kind of lots of the activities in Butlins. So I remember going on the boating lake, doing abseiling, and my teacher kind of falling down head first. we did basket weaving. I got a certificate for my acting in the acting class.
Well done.
Thank you very much. I'm quite proud of that, actually. So we stayed at Butlins Pathelli, and I said, it's not there anymore. It's a housing estate. The food's not too good. And the chalets are pretty cold, but I'll manage. I know, exactly.
Such a stalwart.
But I can distinctly remember you had to queue up in a line to go into the dining hall to eat. And very often the rubbish lorry would come round at the same time. So there was this kind of standing joke among, it would go up and down the line of these children, you know, here they're dropping off lunch, you know.
Oh, and yes.
There was also this thing where the waiters, when it came to pudding, they would start at one end of really long tables and they'd have the jelly and they'd kind of launch it down the table. And sometimes it just flew off the end, which obviously created great uproar among these 11-year-olds. So I remember it was a really fun trip. And yet I chose not to send a Butlins postcard. I said, I hope you like the card. It's a picture from Port Merion Village with lots of beautiful buildings. Okay. We went there on Sunday. And this is fascinating to me. This sat in my postcard collection in the loft. And I had completely forgotten about it. I think my grandparents must have given it back to me. But it was just sitting there. And my mum found it and she said, oh, you'll like to read this one. Because in 2016, I wrote the official history of Butlins.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, complete.
And had you slightly obliterated this little proto-Butlins trip you did? Or have you always been aware that you had that at the back of your mind? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed it, but I think it felt a bit uncool at the time as well in the late 80s. You know, it wasn't a great period for Butlins and the British seaside generally.
Close to being the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the two Butlins closed in 1983 and I was going in 88. So, yeah, it was a tricky period because they weren't getting all the visitors that they needed. So things, I mean, even as an 11-year-old, you could tell it was feeling a little bit run down.
A bit tired,
yeah, the paintwork and stuff. And it just, you know, so it did have that air about it. And it felt okay for a school trip, but you kind of thought, oh, well, I wouldn't go home and say, please take me back again. Mm. What I remember now is that it gave me an opportunity to do some of the things that I've written about. You know, they had these amazing swimming pools, which were indoor, but in the side of the pools, they had windows,
plate glass.
So you could see people swimming
inside.
Were they
giving the view onto the bar, some of them?
Yeah, that's right. I've seen
the pictures. So, yeah.
Exactly. They're wonderful postcards.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could sit in the cafe drinking your cup of tea, whatever, and you could see all these legs swinging past. You know, people said you just couldn't get up to anything because everything was on show.
That's a visionary idea, though.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
It is. Billy Butlins called them human aquariums, and I love that. But
yeah,
I did get to swim in one, you know, before they ceased to be. So I'm kind of pleased about that. And it's only latterly that I kind of realised that, because my parents weren't really the kind to go to Butlins. Mm. So without that, I wouldn't have had that experience.
Have you been to stay in a Butlins since?
I have, yeah. I've been to Minehead after I wrote the book, and I stayed in their brand new chalets with my family, and it was great. And we had the dining package, and it was, you know, all you could eat, fantastic food. And yeah, we had a great time.
I bet it's absolutely nothing like that experience that you remember.
Nothing like this experience, no.
Completely
different.
No,
but it is kind of having gone back to the 1930s when Butlins started through their archive and kind of seen everything that was on offer there, and through the 50s heyday, and just there was this sort of real sense of excitement about going there. Mm. And I wish I could have gone then, but you know, we had a nice time, so it's kind of.
But history's a funny thing, isn't it? Because, or the past is a funny thing, because you kind of grow up. We don't really live in the present. We live in the immediate past, to the extent that all the stuff around you has been created in the past.
Yeah.
And the seaside is a very good example of that. I think when you go to the seaside, very often what you're actually looking at is the kind of accumulation of developments in that place up to this point.
Absolutely.
And you're specifically looking at those old things, the old pier, the old winter gardens, as you say. And there's that sense of slightly revelling in the past.
The nostalgia.
And why is that? Yeah. Why does the seaside make you do that?
I think because it is that accumulation, because even things like ice creams and sticks of rock, donkeys, you know, they all go back a long way and they're part of what we think of. They're an inherent part of what the seaside is.
Just your own childhood, but beyond as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of an inherited consciousness of that sort of holiday expectation.
So there's a Jungian archetype of the seaside deep in our unconscious. I'll go with that.
I'm going to say so, yeah. Yeah.
Well, very good. Thank you very much for sharing those cards with us. And actually, we see a bit of a germ of your career in those cards, which is terrific. I've taken the opportunity to bring in a couple of extra cards here that are sort of not in the past postcard style, really, but are kind of on the seaside, because I see so many seaside cards. I thought I'd share these with you today. Here's one to have a look at, both of you.
Oh, wow.
The Sands Blackpool, little girl on a donkey.
I suppose what interested me about that, is it about 19... 1908, I think that was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that girl is on a donkey. I don't think the donkey's on the beach.
The beach has been added later.
Something feels wrong to me.
The scale is off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the guy that's kind of manning or holding the reins of the donkey is much bigger than he probably should be compared to the people in the background.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's actually a bit of the old Cold War Steve about this.
But I think there's
been some cut and paste done.
Yeah, I love how
Edwardian Photoshop.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I like those photo montages, and so it just caught my eye. I mean, I didn't buy it specifically. It came in a job lot of cards, but I held on to that. But I think we need your eye on this one, Catherine.
Ooh.
Because what now are these? Are they bathing machines?
No,
are they
those are beach huts.
What model are they?
Do you know what? That's quite interesting because these could be potentially some of the first beach huts in the country.
So where are we?
We're in Felixstowe.
Yeah.
And the date is 1905. And so up until the end of the 19th century, it was common for people to use bathing machines, so like beach huts on wheels. And that's
which was
kind
the
of
way
my...
of protecting your modesty as you went into the water.
That's kind of my other postcard, so we're coming on to that. But... there was a campaign in the 1890s to change that. And I've got photographic evidence from about 1896 of beach huts at Felixstowe. And so, you know, these are really early. That's the first documented place I could find in all my research, which actually had them, as opposed to, you know, bathing machines that had their wheels taken off.
But these look a bit like that, don't they? They're not like the permanent ones up on the cliff in front of the bluff.
They're still very much on the beach, aren't they?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're changing huts, effectively. Nice picture.
That's lovely.
There you are. I don't want to tread on your toes, but a hint of the seaside from the days gone by.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are writer Victoria Richards and historian of the seaside, Catherine Ferry. Now, Victoria, what is the second card you have for us today?
Right, well, on the front of this card, I've been wanting to describe it as a snow fox, but I've realised that that's probably inaccurate, and it's simply a fox in the snow.
Right.
So
nice distinction.
It's a very sort of fluffy, cute, pensive almost, I think you'll agree.
Oh, yeah.
He's wistful.
Looking fox. He's thinking about perhaps a lover or a lost career opportunity, something. Anyway, he's been caught entirely naturally. frolicking.
He's not a stuffed fox like some.
Well, I mean,
I don't think he is.
I'm not sure. He doesn't look... he looks...
I think he's real.
Quite vibrant. And this was sent to me... last year, I think, yes, last year, from Japan. It's got a lovely Japanese pagoda on the stamp there, and a little rabbit as well. And it's I used to live in Japan, so in 2003 I went to live there for a couple of years and taught English, like lots of people do, after I graduated from university. And I had some students that I remembered really fondly, but as is sort of inevitable, I guess, I went out there
just after graduating. And when I came back from Japan, I stayed with my parents for a bit, and then I moved back to Wales and trained to be a journalist, and then I moved back to London. So my addresses have moved. And at the time when I went over to Japan, I didn't use Facebook or Twitter or any sort of social media. So I kind of thought that I'd left all of those lovely connections back in Japan until last year, when one of my former students tracked me down. And what is interesting, I think, about this postcard is that the reason for this, you know, it's been a 13-year absence. I haven't been, or longer than that, 14 years since I was in Tokyo teaching. And she was inspired to write to me because of Brexit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. That's what I find so wonderful. And I'm just going to read...
she didn't send a food parcel as well.
But she may well have done. So I'm just going to read... It's really lovely the way the translation has sort of, you know, kind of enhanced the sentiment. So she says, "Hi, Victoria. Sorry for the sudden card. I'm worrying about this. Makes you feel surprised." And then she says, you know, "It's been a long time. I hope you remember me. Teiko, a Japanese friend of yours." And then she says... "Britain must be facing a tough time, but hope you have a calm moment with your loved ones.
Oh.
Take care."
There's a poetry.
I know, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. And I just, you know, I sort of found it very, I guess, poignant, but also quite amusing. And just it's this lovely kind of, you know, moment from someone in Japan thinking of us suffering in Britain, as we still are today.
But it sort of emphasises the fact that I don't know how it's being reported in Japan, but it sounds like it sounds like Britain's in crisis, which I guess day to day we're not.
Mm.
You know, we're all getting on.
Yes.
Whatever the politics of it all, we're all sort of surviving. But also, you know, it reminds you how far away different parts of the world are. But you can cross those boundaries with a postcard.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd love to know what it was, you know, what particular piece of footage or which newspaper headline, you know, has made her think, I should write to England.
It reminds me of cards you see from sort of before the Second World War. You know, is everything all right with you?
Yeah. Did you get back in touch with her?
Yes. Well, again, it's kind of, I think we've been lost, because by the time this got to me, it's actually got a redirection sticker on there too. And by the time I wrote back, the redirection sticker was 2017. And there's been just months and months between this. So I haven't heard from her again,
sadly. Oh, so it's taken a long time to get to you.
Yeah, it took ages to get to me.
That's quite exciting.
So... You know, and maybe, I mean, maybe she's writing a response. Maybe she's waiting to see the outcome of the Brexit situation, and then I'll get another postcard.
Yes.
If so, I'll bring it in. I'll let you know.
Perhaps like Boris Johnson, she's preparing two parallel postcards.
Yes.
Well, that's very nice. And I think it's nice to get cards from overseas as well. And so exciting. Mm. You don't have to be a child to be excited to get a postcard.
No.
It's a nice thing to get. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm glad people are concerned about us.
Yes.
That's sweet, yeah.
So, Catherine, what's the last card you have for us today?
Well, inevitably, I'm going back to the seaside.
Good.
But I thought I would go back a bit further in time. So I'm going back to 1904. And I've got a slightly saucy card here. I think there's always room for that. So we have a picture. It's an illustrated card, not a photograph. We've got three bathing machines. And sitting on the steps of the one in the foreground, we have a lady with slightly sort of curly hair. She's got a necklace. She's wearing a bathing costume. But one of the straps on her arm is sort of, yes, it's fallen down midway.
That's quite
and
saucy.
There's a bit of a cleavage showing there. She's tying up her shoelace. They used to wear these sort of beach shoes with like ballerina pumps with ribbons up the ankles. Oh, right. And she's in this sort of slightly saucy pose. And then in front of her is another lady with one leg on the step of the bathing machine. She's wearing one of the kind of these Edwardian costumes that's full body, but there's a deep V at the back. Mm. So showing off plenty there. And she's got her hands up touching her head. And then there's a rather portly looking man looking on in his striped bathing costume, his handlebar moustache there, looking fairly pleased with himself, I'd say.
He looks transfixed with the...
Exactly.
What's going on in front of him, doesn't
he? Yeah. But what's lovely about this image is that the writing on the back as well, it's written to Harry Vernon, who was at 33 Ironmonger Row, St Luke's, London.
Okay.
And it was sent from Southend-on-Sea.
Oh,
so
right.
I wonder whether the...
Is St Luke's in the East End?
I don't know.
I'm not
sure. No, Ironmonger Row. I mean, it sounds like kind of...
Be in the city, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but it's sent in August, so maybe it was an August bank holiday,
yes.
Which would make sense. And the message says, "How does this strike you for two fine pair of legs? Ooh. Lily's and mine. Tut, tut, her figure was all her own." "That is you standing, looking on with longing eyes, gazing fondly on at the legs."
Oh, wow. This is
this is sexting.
There's
in
a genuine connection between the message and the picture in this case.
Exactly. And you don't always get that, do you?
I play on the disparity.
Exactly, exactly. But this one, he's obviously chosen this card very specifically with the aim of writing these things. And then he says, "We all went to wash our tootsies this morning and made the water so dirty," which I love.
That's good. Yeah,
and it's just from a moment as well. 1904, mixed bathing is still a relatively new thing at that time. So,
And would that, the beach, the bathing machine, would that be true to that period, or is it a bit archaic? No, that's off the time.
No, they're still very much in use at that point. But the latest thing is to have the beach hut, and then rather than sort of change in your bathing machine in the sea so that you can just directly step out into the water and nobody really sees you, now this is the period when it's okay, it's morally acceptable, or beginning to be more so, to be seen walking across the beach in your bathing costume, which means that you get fashions in bathing costume now, because if nobody saw them, there was no point in having fashion. No, exactly. So this is sort of making a comment on fashions as well, I suppose. But yeah, there was this campaign in the 1890s, a newspaper campaign, where people who were relatively wealthy had been onto the continent and seen how people bathe there, men and women together, aghast. But they were okay. There were no mass orgies or anything. You know, everybody got on with it. It was fine. And so they wrote into the newspapers and said, "Look, why can't we do this in this country?" Up until that point, people had been segregated on the beach. So there was a male section of the beach where the men's bathing machines were, and then there was a female section. And in part, that was because a lot of men refused to wear any clothes, which is something that people don't really know about.
It's such a complicated sort of anthropology
around
something
fascinating.
So simple.
Yeah.
I mean, if
but
you take
it
a child
really
onto the beach, they will run into the water, splash around, start crying, and come back again.
Yeah.
And really, that's all any of us want to do.
Yeah.
But they codified it so much. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And you had to pay for it, of course. So you couldn't just swim in the sea for free at most resorts. You had to pay for the experience.
Wow.
So it's a money-making thing.
Which is pretty undemocratic, isn't it?
Yeah, and the idea that you'd have to do that now, I think people would be up in arms, but that was absolutely what people expected to do.
To who? To sort of what the local government?
Yeah, the people
body
who
of
owned,
the town?
Well, people who owned the bathing machines. They were providing a service. So, there's kind of a lot going on in this image about... And obviously, as soon as you get mixed bathing, you get all these cards about the male voyeurs looking on and the women sort of... The freedom element about it. So,
And people are undressed.
Absolutely.
You know, this would be a transgression anywhere else in the open air.
That's right, yeah.
I love the way the language reflects, you know, what was considered risque then. Mm. And if we were to compare it to today, obviously, it's just so starkly different, isn't it?
Yes,
it's definitely cheeky, though. Both the picture and the writing.
Surprisingly so, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's what I like about it, because I think we have this kind of vision of people in that period as being quite staid.
Yes.
And, you know, they were just the same as us, really. You've only got to read the back of postcards to see that, haven't you?
Oh, totally. And I think to be honest, that's the message I pick up from all the many thousands of cards I look up, is that lots of details of life change. But actually, you're writing a card to someone you care about. You want the weather to be nice, and you want to spend time with people you care about. And it's only 100 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
You think we've evolved since then? Yeah. I don't think so.
It's our great grandparents, isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, a perfect summary of some of your excitement and interest in the seaside. Thank you both so much for bringing your cards in. I'm thrilled that you brought them in and share them with me and with the listeners. Another quick reminder, images of all these cards, even the shocking seaside ones, are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, including one last one from me in the past postcard style, which you may be familiar with from Twitter and from the book. And this is a card of Great Yarmouth.
Oh, how appropriate.
A total coincidence, actually. I must have been reading your mind. It's an extraordinary card, really. It's of a sort of waterway in Great Yarmouth.
With a sort of dragon boat going down it. That has just been restored and reopened this year.
Very good. News just in. And who'd have thought they'd bother, actually? Because it's an unusual thing to bother with.
It kind of is, yeah.
And this was 1961. sent to Bletchley in Buckinghamshire from, it's hard to read the name of the correspondent, sent to someone called Margaret. And it's not a sort of hilarious card, but I just thought the detail was interesting. 1961. It says, we've only managed 4 baths in the whole fortnight. The weather has been so awful. And apparently they only have good weather in Great Yarmouth now, I've heard.
That's right.
We have been into Yarmouth to the cinema, a circus, and the Bruce Forsyth show.
Oh, that is a complete
all those years
experience.
Ago. All those years ago. Wow. The bungalow is pretty awful, but it is very handy for the bus stop and beach, so we don't mind. So I think there's
stoicism.
You've got the whole story in there.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
And of course, it's a reminder why you have all these entertainments at the seaside in Britain.
Because of the rain, yeah.
Because you can't guarantee the weather. You know, when you're on holiday in Spain, you don't need all that stuff.
No.
But amusement arcades, shows on the end of the pier.
Bruce Forsyth. Yeah. What more do you need?
It'll keep you busy.
Yeah.
You know, you turn your eyes inland from the sea and entertain yourself that way. Well, before we let Victoria and Catherine back out into their worlds, doubtless to the seaside, and in Victoria's case, not to the shops, it's become customary for us to end the programme with a card like this, which you may both be familiar with, but let's see. So here's a card for you both to have a look at. Use your powers of description on that one, Victoria.
Well, it's a very familiar... Oh, well, I was going to say it's a very familiar
yes,
thing.
I was fooled. I thought it was a London Bridge.
Yeah,
but it isn't.
No, exactly. We've got a big stone lion, haven't we?
And we've got that big dome there. I was thinking, oh, we're in the vicinity of St Paul's, but
yeah,
we're
it looks
not
like St Paul's exactly. It looks like very ornate stone bridge that could easily be one of London's beautiful, you know, landmarks. But am I meant to have looked on the back?
Yeah.
So on the back, we see this actually a scene from Budapest. It's the Chain Bridge in Kettenbrücke. Oh, no, that's probably Chain Bridge. In Lankid?
Yeah, I guess it's a bridge over the Danube.
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
Amazing. And it's very... It's interesting, the feel of this as well. It's kind of like a light plastic coating, isn't it?
Well, it's a record.
Yeah, because it has a hole in the middle.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, you can see in the light, you can just sort of see
the grooves.
Of absolutely. Well, what does it play?
I think Tom's still awake, so if we can just grab him, perhaps he could see if we can make it play.
How exciting.
Wonderful.
Here we go.
Oh, this is the stuff.
This is the music of my dreams.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's one person playing the entire thing.
It feels a bit like one hand.
Yes,
off.
Yeah.
It's not quite a stylophone, but it's not far off. I always say this, but not bad for a piece of cardboard.
Incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah. What treat.
I did not expect that to happen.
No.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
How's your Hungarian?
Not good enough.
No, sadly.
Very good.
Oh, it's lovely. What a treat.
Well, as the Chain Bridge over the Danube rotates at 33 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Victoria Richards and Catherine Ferry. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. Minden kevés, ha tudnád, hogy mennyire várlak, talán még jobban sietnél hozzám, hisz boldog az a fény. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at @PastPostcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.